it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Oi, oi! I'm Jimmy Bullard, and this is me old muck of Venus. We're back together, son. How are ya?
Hi, Bully. Great to be back working with you. Well, what are we doing here, though?
We're starting a football club in podcast form. The only thing we know, it's called FC Bullard. After that, it's all up for grabs.
So, we haven't got any players, we haven't got a kit, we haven't got a club badge, we haven't got a stadium.
Correct. FC Bullard. Welcome to the club.
Why are we doing this?
For the love of the game, mate.
For the love of rugby.
In today's episode...
The evolution of Courtney Laws.
Is he still getting better?
How did he become a ball carrier?
Longevity.
Converting to six.
Smashing people.
And how rugby used to be chaos.
Court, thanks for joining us, mate.
Pleasure. Good to be here.
Really appreciate it.
Find the place, right?
Yeah, it was fine, yeah.
Mate, when was peak Courtney Laws?
I'd say... The way I'm playing this season and probably the year prior, so the Australia tour, then that season, it's probably some of my best rugby. And then previously was 2017 New Zealand tour. I'd have said I was similar level. Different parts of my game were better then, but I'm somewhat better at different things now. So I don't know. I've just been able to kind of try at least to continue developing my game, and with experience, it helps you make an impact more regularly, I think, and I've just been able to continue to perform, I guess.
Like, what is there anything that's actually created that? Like, have you got a different mindset, Courts? Like, you obviously knew you were calling time internationally after the World Cup. Like, is there anything that's changed that's allowed you to maybe go to that next level again? Because that's what it looks like.
I think, to be honest, mate, when Eddie came in, and I've always been like really competitive, a really competitive bloke. I've always wanted to be a really good player, you know, one of the best players. But I wasn't really living that until Eddie got there. I'd stopped really pushing myself as hard as I could. And then Eddie came in and dropped me. And then I was like, shit, damn, like, I'm no longer in the team kind of thing. So I need to start pushing myself. I can be better. I knew I could be better. And then from there, that kind of drive just never stopped. So like, I went from just trying to get back in the team to obviously getting back in the team and starting. And then you push on and, you know, you become a leader in the team. And then before you know it, you're kind of captain. But then... even beyond that, I was like, well, why stop here? Like, I want to push me, you know, one of the best players in the world to leave a bit of a legacy behind you, because you just kind of, you get on that path and you realise you're in a position where you actually can do that. So let's go for it kind of thing. That's really what's still driving me. Like, I'm still hungry for it. I still think I can be better and play better. Like, I'm never satisfied. I always want to be the player I wish I could be, I guess. But yeah, that's what drives me.
It's strange, isn't it? Like, you're never truly satisfied, but yet so many people would be. And is that what, I suppose, separates players?
I think you always, like, as I say, of course, you strive for like the perfect game, don't you, in regards to like almost like making no mistakes, or, but even you're never going to do it, but it doesn't stop you striving for it. And even if you get there, you look at, say, ooh, a clear out or a tackle, you're like, I could have been better at this, and it's always that, or I could do more. Like, you make 30 tackles in the game, then you're like, oh, I can make 31, I can make 30, you know what I mean? So there's always that, and I think that's partly being a competitor, and then partly it's just you learn how to push yourself and you get further on. How have you found, like, obviously we're quite old now between the three of us, do you find it's more of a mental game you play with? Because obviously you want to say, oh yeah, I do loads of extras, but when you're like, can't bend over in the morning, it's like, I'm not going to do loads of extras, my extras is going inside.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going inside and, yeah, and going in this order. So how have you found that as you're older, do you find yourself switching off more, or?
Yeah, definitely. And it is one of them things, like, I had a back spasm before the Bulls game at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We're kicking off at 8 and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to play. Like, I'm supposed to be captain. I'm fucked. Yeah, I am fucked. No matter what happens, and even if I can play, I'm fucked. I took a load of painkillers, got out there, and I could run. I could move. And I was like, bugger it. We'll go for it kind of thing. Knowing full well that I was going to be toast for the rest of the week kind of thing. But yesterday was the first day in about 6 weeks to 2 months that, like, I didn't have hip issues or a back issue. And I was like, flipping out, I can actually feel pretty good. Got to the session and I was like, you know what? I could probably do some extras today. And then I was like, but then you're going to be fucked tomorrow. So let's not do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I was like, yeah, let's just leave that. Let's just leave that. You know, you do all that while you're young to get to the position you are when you get a bit older. And then it's about, for me anyway, it's about making sure that I feel good going into the games. If I can feel fast and mobile and like I can get around the park, then I will have a big impact. And then that's when all your experience comes in, and the fact that you know the game so well that you don't have to have trained the whole week or done all the extras because you've been doing it your whole career. You know what I mean? You've logged the hours, and now it's just about making sure that you're in your body's in a state where you can actually perform.
I'm just going to, you know, when you said that Eddie basically gave you like, go work at your game, blah, blah. Like, did he almost say to you, like, I think there's more in you, you go figure out yourself, or I think there's more in you in this department and I'll help you get there. And when you do it, like, you'll be back in because... But like, what was that sort of like nudge that you kind of needed, or?
No, it wasn't, I'll help you, it's you're gone until you get better. Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
Basically, it was like, yeah, it was basically like, look, you hit well. And like, I've basically been pretty one-dimensional for a few years. When I first came onto the scene and we came on together, like I was known for my ball carrying and big hitting kind of thing. And then for whatever reason, I lost a lot of confidence with my ball carrying. So I just was like, oh, don't worry about it. I'll get my basics right. You know, line out's important. I can bang people, and that's just what I'll do. And then I wasn't too worried about like getting around the pack and trying to carry and stuff like that. But Eddie was like, no, we need a ball carrier. So until you saw that area of your game out, you haven't got a place in the team kind of thing. So I went away and, you know, just worked really hard. I did a ton of extras. Every session I'd do extra. And we did loads of stuff, didn't we? Like that drill out of the post and stuff like that. Yeah. Just moving, footwork and all that kind of stuff. Until eventually, you know, I kind of just reignited that part of my game. And then once you start doing that, you learn that, oh, actually, you can do that for anything, really, as long as you've got the kind of attributes to do it. So, yeah, that moved on to breakdown now and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was a real, like, you know, learning curve for me, and it's the thing that really changed my trajectory.
Courts, that drill you mentioned about working your ball carrier, do you want to just give listeners a bit of an idea what that is?
Yeah, so essentially, you can just use the post as like your defender is what we'd do. So Lenny had essentially set up ruck. You would run at your defender. He would pass the ball to you as close to the pad as possible. And you'd essentially either step in or step out just to work on your footwork and your timing, basically. It also helps you catch the ball on the run, which sounds really simple and easy, but you'd be surprised how many people don't move until they've caught the ball because they're worried about actually dropping it or, you know, not catching it. But if you
got to put yourself in that position first, mate. I do my own drill where I stand just diagonally behind Courtney and get the breakdown once he's caught it and carried it. It's like, yep, breakdown, lads.
Some players, are worried about catching it. So, yeah. But yeah, it does really help you with your timing and also getting the ball on the move, which is a big advantage.
So Courtney, obviously, seen the evolution of him in regards to, he came on the scene, we all knew he could hit people. He could carry a ball, but it probably wasn't the main strength of his game. I think it was more defensively. And I think as you saw, as he got older, he became the complete back rower. I think you've always had back rowers that can do certain things, like David Pocock was brilliant over a ball. He could carry a bit, but his focus was the ball. You have other back rowers that can ball carry. And you might get guys who are back rowers that can, like a Tom Croft, who was a line out, great in open space, but he was sort of line out forward. Whereas Courtney, he's in the middle of the line out. He can play in the space, the wide space. He plays in the tight spaces. He carries into car crashes. He gets over a ball. He jackals. He makes line breaks, offloads. Like, there's not many players, I think, that play rugby, not many back rowers that can do the complete spectrum of skills. And not just do them averagely, do them at a world-class level. I think that's what sets him apart, is the fact that he doesn't just... You probably get back rowers that can ball carry 6 out of 10, jackal 6 out of 10, this 6 out of 10, but he does everything to a 9 out of 10 standard.
And it's the leadership bits as well. This is the other thing that people just don't see. It's that presence. It's that ability to drag others with you. It's the ability to hold people accountable. We got a question on the pod a couple of weeks ago. What's the difference between a premiership player and an international player? we said about how you need a point of difference. You need, what is your X factor? And as you mentioned, like with courts, it's jackaling, it's carrying, it's tackling, it's line out. So it's not just one point of difference. Like there's four, and someone might be also able to jackal, but can they do line outs? Can they hit like he can? But like jackling's another one, courts. Mate, what was the World Cup like? What were we saying earlier?
Well, we were saying before, like 2023 World Cup, like you were getting two or three a game. That was just almost like the final string to your bow in regards to like, obviously you've always been able to hit, the carry was there, the set piece was there, line at work, and then like the ability to jackal and just turn the ball over, like, which you've, you know, it's not like it's new to you've done, but like the fact that it was consistently throughout games and the impact of the game, handling the game, it was just like Courtney is the complete player.
So when I was a bit younger, I did attempt to jackal quite a lot, but I got injured a lot doing it. Basically, like I hadn't developed the leg strength you need to be able to withstand a lot of people clearing you out and trying to turn you over or whatever. Because a lot of people will, if they can't knock you out of the way, they'll roll on you. And if you haven't got strong legs, you just, like my MCLs, I had like five different MCL injuries, pretty much just from that. When Eddie came in, again, it wasn't him that really did this, but I just started taking my strength and conditioning a lot more seriously, like especially kind of compound lifting. I don't do a lot of deadlift now because of my back, but I squat a lot still. And having that leg strength, and Coley, you'll know this as a front row, that like if you can get that compound lifting in, if you can be properly strong and lift good weights, it actually protects you in a lot of ways when you're playing rugby. So, and that has allowed me to then actually put myself in positions where you can get hurt and know that you've got the strength to get away with it, essentially.
The longevity stuff. 2 years in France, you caught, myself and Coley got a little while left here. You don't miss a day of training. Like you don't ever stop. So therefore it's almost like if you did stop, you'd be fucked.
Yeah.
You look at DC, still going, like Marla's still running around. I'm still world class when I'm given the opportunity.
non-23 sessions, you are brilliant.
I am unbelievable on a Friday in the non-23 at the moment, mark my words. I mean, there's no live coverage of it, but just listeners, take my word for it. I show those academy lads how it's done. what do we put it down to?
I reckon it is that competitive instinct and the fact that, like Coley touched on, you're never satisfied with where you're at. So you're constantly pushing yourself. You're not giving yourself any days off. If you do have a day off, it's for recovery purposes, you know? So it's actually for a purpose, and your ability to push yourself is what determines where you're going to end up, essentially, how far and how hard. And obviously there's a bit to do with talent and athleticism and that kind of stuff. But generally it's how hard you're willing to work and how far you're willing to push yourself through that pain. If you do that for long enough, you have a long career. You know what I mean?
Pushing through pain. It reminds me of Coley running in Denver.
running every day. Just running in general.
No, I just had visions of you running with Marla in Denver with Lanny next to you, encouraging you.
Yeah. Encouraging us, and we just ignored it, but he went back.
Who was it that nearly died on one of them sessions? Was it like, it wasn't Sink or someone, was it?
In Denver?
In Denver, yeah. It was a prop. It was definitely a front row.
I think he might be in this room.
Me. I'm pretty sure it was...
No, Coley's not bad at fitness. Well, he's actually
Coley's actually really good.
No, I'm not. I'm just very slow and steady. I won't win anything, but yeah. I'll just continue going.
We did that mass running, didn't we? Yeah. And it was minging. Who?
One of the props. Henry Thomas?
No, I don't know if it was him. No? Brooksy, maybe?
Maybe Brooksy. Yeah, Brooksy does ring a bell. I think... Oh.
No, it was.
So Brooksy is Kieran Brooks, who played a long time at Northampton, Leicester, Newcastle Wasps, and I think he's now in Toulon.
Brooksy got destroyed in a scrum, didn't he? Like after at the end of the session, whole,
we're in a huddle at the end, and Brooksy's head's down, and Graham Rowntree was like, "You remember, like it was in the, it was at like Denver Rugby Club. It had like concrete stands and stuff, didn't it? And it was like Brooksy had his head down. It's like." Graham Rowntree's like, look at me. And Dave Hatt was like, look at him.
Yeah, that was it. I knew this. Like that. But yeah, I just remember the scrum and being like, Brooks is in the air. His feet are off the ground.
I do think like longevity-wise, go back to the point, like we've probably played at like a not perfect time, but like when we came into the game, rugby was fairly brutal. I think we got the end of like that first wave professionalism where training was right, just go and have a fight for 2 hours or go and do units for 2 hours, and like the game's evolved to the point where it's all now like short, sharp, intense. I think like it's probably put us in good stead in the fact that today some guys are like, oh my god, 40 minutes, that was so hard. It's like, that's not a hard session.
Topless mauling. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, we've done some stuff.
Yeah.
I watched a bit of clip ahead of this. I looked at the opening game against Argentina in the World Cup in 2011. Mate, like it's chaos. Yeah. Like the breakdown is ferocious.
Yeah.
Like it is physical. Not as structured as obviously it is now or anything like that, but like I looked at it, I was just like, geez, like I played in that.
I remember. I remember that game, and I was just flying, like literally just flying around trying to hit anything I could. First World Cup match. Do you know what I mean?
It's unbelievable.
It was nuts, wasn't it? Yeah.
And you watch it back, and it is. It's like, oh my god, breakdown, the tackles. Like
the game's never been safer in like and more strict and organised in that regard. And but I say, yeah, you look at those 2011 games. It's literally four or five blokes flying into breakdowns, just off the feet, shoulder charge in, and anything goes. And it's like play on.
There's still not loads of players that have played as long as we have, though. Like you think of all the players that have kind of come and gone through the years, and like even boys like Dill's got to 33, I think, and stuff. Do you know what I mean? So like, it's not that easy. It takes a bit of luck as well, probably. Do you know what I mean?
Eddie always said to me, like, and I really strongly believe this. He said, like, it'll be two things that give up, Benny. It's either your mind or your body. It just depends what comes first. It's either your mind's great and you want to keep doing
just
it.
Just what else, though?
Overeating.
It's your mind or your body, you're right? Tired. Or, yeah, right. That's all bases covered then, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it's not wrong, to be fair. Yeah.
Fuck off, Colby. I took that as like absolute wisdom from him. And I swear by that. Yeah. And now you've proper mugged me off. Well, maybe it's the non-23 sessions that get you in the end. Who knows? On the Friday. Cheers, mate.
Mind, body, or coaches. So that's what's going to do you. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Mind, body, or you just shit.
Or contracts. Yeah. Or negotiations.
Or like we said, the game was what it was in 2011 to what it is now. You just can't evolve with it. But yeah, that was quite amusing watching that. And then like, it's because it is like we basically have played for an era where the game has changed and like the safety's changed. The structure of the game now, it's like, you know, obviously Northampton play a very, you know, move the ball. They play great rugby.
It's still a really structured team, and that's what allows you to play or whatnot. But yeah, back in the day, it was literally just one out runners. Even when, do you remember when Eddie first got in there and would do, I can't remember what it was called, like Bolt or something, where like we'd get to an edge and then we'd just send two runners as hard as we could at the line. That is so different to now. Like, it's a completely different game. It's changed so much.
That's right. We would, wouldn't we? And then we could either go out the back of them or hit them.
Yeah,
and,
like, yeah, either hit them or go out the back.
You wouldn't do that now, would you?
No, definitely. You just get eaten up, eaten alive, wouldn't you?
It is mad.
Yeah.
Do you wish you converted to six earlier? And like, who made that? Because like, you played six and then you played row and then you kind of went back to six and now you definitely finished your career as a six.
Yeah, definitely. I remember the first few seasons, even with Saints, I would play, depending on, because we had Lobbe and Yondre Kruger, depending on whether Nacho was fit, I would play. And if he wasn't going to play, I'd play in the second row. And if he was going to play, I'd play six. So I was always kind of that utility. I played a couple of games at six, but wasn't really successful, especially for England, I don't think. And then people were like, oh, he's second row, definitely a second row kind of thing. And then I think the game actually changed quite a bit, whereby you needed a third jumper in the lineout, like a good jumper, like it made such a big difference with your set piece. And that was when I go from what is a pretty lightweight second row to a number six.
Is there much difference? Because I imagine, Coley, if you went from tight head to loose head.
Tight head's the hardest position in sports, mate. So.
But could you lock it down at loose head?
You could get away for a little while.
Funny you mention that, because Joe Marler went from loose head to tight head. Can you remember when we played Quins? What year was that?
We played Italy in the World Cup qualifier. He like came on to you 10 minutes at the end and just pre-engaged everything and like, the referee was just like, let's get this game over with.
Yeah.
Like, just get it over with. Like,
we played Quins at Twickenham one year and I think Sinks had gone off and Marler, they had to, like, whatever. He was like, fine, I'll go tight head. Mate, we'll get some footage up. He refused to go down, but he was willing to go back. My God. Quins were up by like 28 points. We end up drawing the game just because of Marler.
Oh, really?
He was like MOM. No. But yeah, so it's mad sort of like trying to change positions.
I'd say playing as a six, you've got a bit more energy around the park because you're not got your head in the flipping engine room. And also you get a few more carries a game, a few more tackles just because you're off the scrum a bit quicker and whatnot. You often, especially nowadays, you'll hold the width as a six. You'll be up against back, so you've got to be a bit quicker and whatnot. But yeah, it's very different. It's changed a lot here.
I was finding in the tight five, you miss a lot of the game. Like, you watch it back because you're obviously in a scrum or whatever, and you can almost sometimes have two phases.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still going and you get out of it. Like, you're running back on side, and it's like, how the fuck did we get on the back here? Well, why am I running 60 metres backwards? I've just been put like this kind of stuff, or like even off a line out, like you lift, you like you come down, make sure everything's right, you check the edge where it is, and you miss the play.
Yeah.
And it's only like, say, back row and stuff, you're actually involved every play and off first phase and stuff, you see the game. But type five, there are, I'd say, almost like a third of the game, like multi phase, you miss because you're literally organising something else. Looking on short sides or going over there, and it's just we're still in the scrum. Then it's bad.
Often, you're in the second row, and obviously you can't see a thing other than the floor. And you have a scrum on your ball. you get up from the scrum and somehow they've got the ball 30 metres down the pitch. You're like, what's going on? What's happened?
I love it when the thing is that when it gets hooked, it's like your ball that gets hooked and it like comes off someone's knee. It's like the flanker's yeah. knee and it rolls back through the scrum.
And everyone panicking.
Like, what are you? Like, fuck.
Shit, what do we do?
Fucking drop it. Drop the scrum. Drop it. Fucking abort. Mate, well, it can be explained at Leicester when Burnsy was there because you'd scrum and you'd get up and be like, how have they scored? It was our ball. Well, Freddie actually did a chip and chase and it didn't work and they picked up and scored.
Hey, you got the drop goal, didn't you?
Yeah. Right. Has he told you, right?
He's told you.
Oh dear. But that's true, actually. You guys, I didn't even think of that. You're too phased, you wouldn't have a clue what's going on. So if we were to lose it, you'd be like, what the fuck?
It's very hard because sometimes you come into like the huddle, you want to have solutions, but it's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, lads, but can you just sort it out? Can you just be better on the edge, lads?
Sort it out.
I've got no solutions for you because I don't know what's going on, but just be better, guys, will you?
We toured to Africa in, when was it? Like, I want to say 2012. Did you come on that one?
No, I mean, I was injured.
Injured. Well, we had one scrum, like five from our line.
It was the first one. It was like the first one in the game. Yeah. It was in Joburg.
Yeah, that's
right. And it was like, we had this great scrum. It was 5 minutes, our ball.
I put it in.
You put it in. We've hit, we've chased. It's like, this is a phenomenal scrum. The crowd's gone crazy. It's like, fuck yeah. They'll be honest. Ball's rolled straight through the side. The six has picked up and scored. I mean, it didn't even touch anyone, so it shouldn't have been a try, but like...
It should have been a reset. Yeah. No strike, straight through the tunnel. They pick it up. Everyone goes crazy. Pack pops up.
Out the other side.
Mate, it goes straight through the tunnel and they pick it up and score. The crowd goes nuts. So these lads pick up and thinking, we want, like, you know what I mean? Penalty against or something like that. And it's like, no, he scored.
I thought the Saffers appreciate a good scrum here. And it's like, oh no.
No,
we're under the sticks. Cool.
I mean, the Lions tour. And like, I'd had a really, really busy like first 10 minutes. Load of carries. I must have had 3 or 4 carries. Load of tackles, getting around the pitch. And I had to like go down onto a knee because I was just blowing. And you know what I'm like? I'm like, I can't show this. Like, I mean, I'm a relatively fit guy.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was toast. I spoke to the boys after. They were like, yeah, I saw that. I was like, I was actually pretty worried.
This is it. Yeah. 2018, we toured Safka, didn't we? And we, like, they were like, right, we're going to go to Durban. We're going to base ourselves in Durban at sea level. And then we'll just fly into Joburg the day before, play. You'll be absolutely fine. Altitude won't affect you. Like, we race into like a 28-0 lead. We end up losing Safka like 39-32. And like all the journalists after, like, what happened? What happened? Why'd you lose? Like, what a fucking lose.
Can't breathe.
Everyone's dead. Like, boys are getting subbed before half time because they're like literally like oxygen. They're absolutely fucked. Like, we're 28-0 up. Like, yeah. The momentum did change, mate. It's called fucking altitude. And now we can fucking run. Oh, the joys, mate. Yeah, the absolute joys.
We have loads more questions, Ben, but we'll just quickly go to the ads.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
So those are the ads. Courts, obviously, the appreciation of you has definitely grown. I think it's probably, I think your stock in the rugby world has never been higher. What do you reckon that comes from? Is it a combination of people being more aware of what you're doing or the way commentators talk about you? Or what do you reckon?
No, I completely understand. Like, there's a lot of kind of hype around me at the minute for whatever reason. I'm not.
But it's rightly. The thing is, it's justifiably so. I say players have always known. People who've played with you, your teammates have always known how brilliant your opposition, always known how brilliant you are.
I've always kind of really appreciated the respect that I've got from my peers the most. And that honestly is what's been most important to me. And I remember when we had the whole shenanigans around like who should be captain and this and that. And everyone's, you know, picking certain players, but I'm nowhere near the radar, and then out of nowhere I'm kind of captain, and that just showed to me back then the difference between, you know, what is happening in the team and in camp and actually what the wider public see and think, kind of thing. And I think that probably has helped people consider that what my game is and how I can impact a team and stuff like that. And then on top of that, probably just the consistency kind of stuff, because like I said, since kind of 2015, 16, I've been a pretty consistent player, developing year on year. But I'm not entirely sure what it is. I suppose a lot of it, especially this season, will be down to the fact that my team, Saints, have been doing so well. And essentially, you do ride off the back of that as a player. Like, regardless of how well I'm playing, if we're losing most games and if Saints aren't in the semi of Europe and top of the league, then you won't get as much coverage and that kind of stuff. So it'll be a lot to do with, I think, how well Saints are doing. And within that, you know, we've got an awful lot of talent at the Saints, and I dare say that a lot of them are actually probably playing as well, if not better than me this season. But I'm just trying to offer what I can in terms of experience. If I think I can add to the conversation and the preparation of the team, then I make sure I kind of do that. And that is my kind of role in the team at the minute. And then being that kind of pillar that is, regardless of the game, how big it is, how small it is, just consistently play like a 7 out of 10, maybe an 8 out of 10 on a good day kind of thing.
Well, I think it's great that you are getting the recognition, mate, because they say your peers, we've always known it. You know, I think of like some just little moments of like when we played Tonga that time and we're up by a load and you run back and you make that tackle on Tolu Savanu. Like, you know, that stuff is like unbelievable. Like, you had no right to get back. There's like, even during the World Cup where, you know, the warm-up games didn't go particularly well for us, then went there, you were then such like a talisman figure almost within the pack and within the group. That again, and I just think it's great that actually you get the recognition you deserve, because, you know, I'd argue that out of all the guys that have got 100 caps, in my opinion, you're the best one out of that lot. Like, do you know what I mean? And, you know, when you think of people talk about Delalio and Hill and Back and all that, like, there's no doubt in my mind that you have to be within that debate. And obviously, I'm going to be slightly biased, I play with you, but I just think it's great that you are getting that, and rightly so. We've got to talk about smashing people.
Yeah, of course.
There's an art to it, and I'm still trying to figure out the art.
Do you reckon it's like something that's like God given to you in regards to like timing, and or is it something you've worked on? Or do you reckon you were sort of born and playing rugby as an 8-year-old, 10-year-old? Yeah. It was something that was in you to smoke people.
You really can't practice it, to be honest.
I'm fucked.
All these years I've been
all
trying.
All these years, mum and dad, God damn you.
And it depends what you're talking about. Like, you can obviously practice being a dominant tackler and your body position, timing, stuff like that. You can practice that. But the kind of stuff that, like, say, some of like the Tuolangis will do, you know, like the hit on Fodes back in the day when we played Perpignan and he literally turned him inside out. Like, you can't actually practice that kind of stuff. It just has to, you essentially, well, you need to have pretty good timing and you need to want to hurt people. And in doing that, you have to be willing to hurt yourself at the same time. And there's been plenty of times where you hit people, and especially the highlight reels are the easiest ones. Like, they're the ones that don't really hurt you. But I've hit a lot of big people. They don't go anywhere and you end up hurting yourself, but you still hit them. All my highlight reels are me just banging like smaller blokes because the impact's a lot greater. And then there was one on like Bastro that I managed to just time it perfectly. But I've actually turned up some pretty big blokes as well, and like, they're the ones that your teammates actually appreciate. It's not like the little lads that, you know, anyone can bang. It's actually like stopping the big blokes that gets the boys up for the game kind of thing. So, and I've done a few of them. They do hurt you, but they're the ones that mean a lot, I think.
I can vouch for the Bastro one, because you can see it. We'll clip it up, put it online, right? Bastro's running and I'm in front of him. And really? I'm like, I'm fucking line break for France right this way, sir. And you come out of nowhere and fucking smoke him. I'm like, oh, thank God for that. I know, yeah.
Honestly, for that one, oh, mate. Because
I behind angle, you can probably see my face of like joy. Like, yes.
I come around the corner and I'm mad for it. Obviously, like, we're playing France or whatever. Come around the corner and Faz is on my outside. And Faz's like, hit him, Courts. Go and get him, Courts. Go and get him. I was like, yeah, I'll fucking get him. I'm going to get him. Like, fly out of the line. Boom. But yeah, that one hurt me as well. Yeah. Good.
The Pilisson one? That Pilisson, one. Pilisson, yeah, that one is like,
that's the iconic one.
It's literally just timing. Just getting that. You can't really do it that much anymore. All the fly halves are a lot quicker than they used to be. Like, it used to be just distributors. So, like, they catch and pass and you. They weren't much threat at stepping you or whatever. Like, if I tried to do that to Marcus or someone like that, it'd have me on toast. But you could time it. So, if I could time it around their breakdown and not break my stride by the time they pass the ball, then I knew I could get to the 10 before around when he's going to pass it.
I'll take any of them, yeah.
I used to do that relatively regularly. It's really hard, obviously, to time, and you've got to have the energy to do it as well. But yeah, I've got a few of them.
Have you ever gone into a game thinking, I'm fucking going for this bloke? Just like, he's having it.
I don't think you can. I think if you try to hit somebody, just because you wanted to hit them specifically. Like, it'd be so rare to get yourself in a good position to actually do that. You have to just take big hits as they come. Like, you can't really plan them. So no, I unfortunately am specifically targeted to anyone. Although I didn't target him, but I hit Manu, and this is his early days, 2012, 2013. And he's hit a decent line, but I read it and I was like, right, this is the one. And I banged him and he didn't go anywhere, mate. Honestly, I was like flipping this guy's back. My shoulder's like on the floor, hanging off. Like, this guy is a joke. I stopped him, so I was happy with that.
Did your job.
But I did my job, but he didn't go anywhere. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm not doing that again. And that's actually, I did start changing my game where I'd probably just chop the bigger guys.
But is it like, what's like the easier tackle for you if someone just goes like straight at you? Or is it like if they're on like a little 45?
45, yeah. If someone's coming straight at me,
and they want it, and you want to give it to them.
Yeah, I'm chopping them. I'm okay. Yeah, 100%, 100%. It's easier to be a good ball carrier than it is to be a good tackler. I think it's really hard to hit somebody that can go either in or out on you. Do you know what I mean? But the best ones for me are when everyone does 10, 20, 30. So if I'm a 40 defender and their first receiver, you do the little pod. And if they run into my channel, I'm like, this is perfect. Because they can't get outside of me. They're only going to run one. And that's when you can just be like, well, there you go. He's running in there and he's getting hit. Do you know what I mean? They're the easy ones. Other than that, I try and err on caution nowadays and try to keep my body in one piece. So I'll just straight spokes.
You've got to make 20 tackles a game. It's kind of like, if you make 20 big hits a game, probably not going to last that
no.
long.
So
it's a,
no.
question,
no.
it's a question of like, when can I... And also, it's like, you make a big hit on like a... Someone on the arrowhead carries, it's just going to be a collision. So it's like, sometimes you want to make a marker, but you're also like, is it worth breaking my shoulder here for a 1 yard game, which they're just going to kick back to us? Yeah. It's like, no, I'll just get them down. And then like,
yeah, exactly.
So it's, yeah.
You got to pick your battles, especially when you get to our age.
With some of your highlight real hits courts, do you ever cast a cheeky eye, break a play, when it comes on the stadium screen?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And a lot of the time, so you'll think you've done something unbelievable on the rugby pitch. And you were like, flipping heck, some carry that. And then you watch your back and you're like, I didn't get anywhere. That was all, like, it's awful. Do you know what I mean?
So we have it in like scrums where it's like, yeah, that's an awesome scrum, really gone. You look back and you've gone forward 2 inches. And it's like, cool. Why is the crowd not on their feet? And it's like, because I've seen you move forward an inch. Or it's like, you think you're getting hoofed. And it's like, you've gone backwards a foot. You're like, you're sitting around the field though. You have it like, you're collision. You're like, hit him there. Fucking, that was a good shot.
Yeah.
And you watch it back and it's just literally like, two blokes just falling over. You're like,
it's so true, isn't it?
It is so
you make
true.
A break and you're like, fucking hell, who do I skin there? It's like, and there was actually just no one there.
So, of course, you've been 17 years at Northampton, which is obviously a long time in rugby, but also in life in general. How have you found, as we speak at Leicester, we've been there a long time, and sometimes coming through the gates day in, day out, sometimes it's brilliant, other times I feel good when I leave the house. I drive through the gates and I feel like my body's in bits. I'm like, how has that changed? Regards to that, day in, day out, for 17 years, it's a long time.
How the fuck have you done it?
Yeah, no, I've nearly moved. Only once have I been actually very close, like had a contract in front of me, ready to sign. And that was pre-COVID, a couple of years pre-COVID, I think, 2017, 2018, when I'm playing very good rugby. I'm a capped lion. I'm obviously very much in the England setup and stuff like that. And I think that you have to be prepared to leave a club, no matter how much you love it, no matter how much you want to be there, because your career is so finite and you're always going to take a little bit less to stay at the club you want to be at, and that's fine. But there's got to be a cut-off, and you can't let people take the mick out of you because you're worth what someone's willing to pay. And if the club you're at the minute and the club you want to be at are not willing to pay that, then you have to be prepared to move. And yeah, I've nearly moved on a couple of occasions, only one which was actually very close. And I think being at the same club for so long, you get into this routine that's just almost every day is like this, the kind of same thing. Do you know what I mean? It's like this continual loop forever. And it's somewhat nice, you know?
There's a comfort in definitely knowing there's a safety net in some regards. Like, you turn up, you know what you can do. You know your sort of place in the like the hierarchy of the structure.
The hierarchy. And you know what you can get away with. You know what you can do.
Yeah.
And I quite like that. And knowing what I'm going to get day to day, knowing I can work with the people around me, knowing that they know what I need to perform as well. And that's probably the biggest apprehension I have going to a different club, is that I'm looking forward to the lifestyle. I'm looking forward to the change of scenery and the adventure with my family and stuff like that. But I'm wondering and hoping that I can develop the same kind of relationship with Breathe, whereby they're trying to get the best out of me from a performance side. Like, I know they're going to want leadership and insight into various different things and how we can improve the game and become a better team, and that's fine. But I hope they're going to allow me to perform how I want to. And you don't know that. You don't know until you get there. And, you know, they might want you to train every session and do everything. And therefore, you know, you might struggle to adapt to that kind of thing. But from what I've spoke to them about so far, and we've not gone mad into detail about it, but I feel like it should be good. Maybe there's some naivety in that from my side, having not left the club or moved at all. But we'll see. And it's 2 years, and regardless of what happens, man, I'm going to try my hardest to enjoy it and embrace it. You know, that's important to me.
The club and the routine, and you almost build up that trust.
Yeah, I was going to say trust.
That's what it is, isn't it? And I suppose that's what you don't know about Breathe. But it's like when you say, get there and you say, I'm not going to do that. Can I do this? Because ultimately all that matters is what I do at the weekend. And will they understand that and will the group accept that? Because you know, and that's the thing. And I think that's the thing with the comforts of the club, you've been there, you have these relationships with people. They know what you're about. They know what you can do, what you don't like doing and all that. And it's all sort of catered for and accepted, where you go somewhere new, it's like, you want to embrace it. You want to be a team player, but equally you almost need to be like, I'll be the ultimate team player on the Saturday, but let me just be a bit selective, especially our age.
You've also earned it already at your club. Like, we've been there for years now. I call it, you'd have been 18 years now?
About that.
Is this your 18th season? Are you 2 years older than us?
Yeah, I'm 36. Soon to be 37.
Right, so you might be like on your 19th season or so, bro. That's serious.
Six carries.
Literally.
Tick.
But yeah, like, you've earned the right to not do the contact sessions, and do you know what I mean? And be looked after, because you've been through it all before. Everybody in the club and in the team knows that you've been there, you've done it, you've earned it. They know that you know what you need. Whereas when you go to a new club, you don't know. Do you have to earn the right again?
I think as a forward, and say that's that credit in the bank, where you kind of go, look, some player's been there so long, you don't need to. I know that on the Saturday, he's going to stick his head in the 79th minute, he's going to do his job and dig in. I don't need to see it, you're saying, fitness, because I know he's going to be ready. But it's also like, sometimes you have especially in the pack, is you want to prove to each other that, I think that's probably one thing that kept us going, is I need to prove to this person, and even if they're like 20 years old, it's like, I need to prove that I'm willing to muck in and do what needs to be done. So I say it's almost like the personal guilt of when you miss a session or miss a fitness session, you're a bit like, and you have to teach yourself. It's like, we've seen it with loads of players, like your brother, for instance, first one to throw himself in on a Tuesday morning, he's got no knee or shoulder ever. It's like, just players have to pull him out. But it's like, no, I need to do it, because this is what I do. And you're like, no, just don't. Whereas, I say, a club, when you've been there a long time, you have that credit and everyone knows, I know he's going to throw himself in there. You'd hope, or you would think that a club would go, look, we have an asset now. What's he need? Let's make the most out of him, because it's, you know, but at the same time, you have to prove yourself to them.
You feel like you have to, you do have to kind of prove yourself again. And I think that's just how we are, like, natured and whatnot. But it'll be interesting.
That's probably going to make you almost, like you say, like we spoke about never being satisfied. You're going to go there and it's like, well, I'm going to fucking show you. Like, I'm going to show you lot. Like, and like, you just walk in the room is enough. But actually, in your head, you're like, no, I'll show you. Like, you obviously hope you get looked after the right way, but you're going to be like, I'm going to show you every weekend, like, what I'm about.
So I've just realised, actually, we haven't asked one question. We've been so engrossed, we haven't asked one question from any of the listeners. So, Courts, could you stay on for a bit and we'll do a whole nother episode on you.
Sweet, mate.
We'll have a Courtney Laws week this week.
Fantastic.
Right, Courtney's going to stick around. And what we're going to do is our normal Q&A that happens on Thursday, we're going to do that with Courtney.
Fantastic plan, Ben.
Couldn't think of anything better, mate.
For the love of rugby.
If you want to drop us a line, get involved with our socials.
Just search for @loveofrugby. And if you've listened to all our episodes and need another podcast, go and find Joe Marler's Things People Do. For the Love of Rugby is ad-free on Amazon Music. If you listen on Apple, you get it ad-free for £1 a week.
See you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.